You're watching Notepad. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We start off the week with an observation of the ESG compendium that was published by Maybank Investment Bank. Here joining me is Anand Padmakanthan, the regional head of equities research at Maybank Investment Bank. Anand, welcome to the show.
Thank you. You
know, it's interesting that you guys came up with this compendium. I was reading it with intent and with interesting thoughts that were running through my mind. First of all, is on the need of having such a compendium. Why do you feel that Maybank Investment has the need or urgency to publish such a document?
Well, there are a couple of reasons for that. I mean, as a group, Maybank has made it very clear, especially in their recent five-year strategy, M25, that sustainability will be at the core of their strategies going forward in terms of their business principles, in terms of growth strategies, etc. And for us, as Maybank Kim Eng, as part of the Maybank Group, now, we also felt that sustainability is something that required a lot more education on the part of both our internal clients, which are Maybank Group companies and staff, as well as our external clients, which are our traditional portfolio managers, as well as institutional investors. So this compendium was born from that need to educate. So it is constructed such that it addresses the positions of all the major stakeholders in the Malaysian economy and sustainability, such as the government, the regulators, the corporates, and not forgetting the asset managers, which like EPF, which play a big part in advancing sustainability concepts and knowledge in the investment environment in Malaysia. I think when we did this report, we tried to be as objective as possible in terms of assessing these various stakeholders. And the report card is very mixed. You know, I think when we look at what the government is doing, yes, we are part of the Paris Climate Agreement. Mm. We have the NDCs, you know, National Determined Contributions. But beyond that, you know, we felt that there seems to be a lack of momentum in other key areas of sustainability that other countries are pursuing very aggressively, such as EVs, you know, electric vehicles, carbon tax as well, or carbon pricing as a way to discipline the market and reduce our dependence on high carbon industries. Malaysia does seem to be lagging. Even our ASEAN peers in these areas. Also, for corporates, we have had many negative headlines of late on the ESG front, especially in terms of the plantation sector for social issues with labour. In the past, it was environmental issues with deforestation and peat. And now, you know, that has sort of spread into the manufacturing sector with companies like Top Glove being implicated in labour issues as well. You know, these E and S issues, environmental and social issues, which I guess corporate Malaysia tended to ignore before, are now coming back to sort of haunt the broader corporate sector. And it's very clear that many corporates are not ready for this, this discipline in E and S in particular. And it's very notable that this discipline is coming from external sources.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it is not domestic funds or domestic investors who are raising a fuss. Mm. It is external investors who are raising a fuss. And that's really the core of the issue. You know, when we look at Malaysia and we look at the pace of sustainability awareness and policies, we can't, when we say it's no longer optional for Malaysia to just, you know, not focus on this, it's because other countries are moving much faster. And we are in an interconnected world. If we want to ensure Malaysia continues to have access to export markets, to supply chains, we have to ensure that Malaysian corporates and the economy as a whole is part of this transition to a low-carbon economy, or else our trading partners may lock us out of these markets because we are not keeping pace.
Some of the bigger industries, like palm oil, for instance, the continued claims of environmental destruction on it continues to haunt Malaysian companies, of course, Indonesian companies as well. The rubber glove that you mentioned as well, when it comes to social, including how they manage their labour force. This is something that I want to deep dive into, right? Because when companies say that they are engaging in ESG initiatives, I have yet to find anybody that is, you know, vehemently or violently against trying to achieve such ideals. But of course, the two factors remain in focus. First is whether or not it hits their bottom line. And of course, if it is, then they would do it. Otherwise, it's a nice to have, but not necessarily to do. That's one. Number two is, of course, the regulators, whether or not they're going to come down hard and perhaps even reprimand companies that do that violate ESG or even the law outright.
Right.
If you don't have this too, it's nice to have. Not that it's not compulsory to do. Do you feel that there is an urgency by Malaysian corporates, or at least companies within this region, of course, the companies that Maybank Investment looks at, do you feel that the urgency is there for these companies to actually pursue this in earnest?
Well, I feel there's a rising urgency, but it's coming from a relatively low base. I think there's a lot of complacency among Malaysian corporates. When you look at the disciplining forces for ESG globally, it tends to come, especially for developing markets like Malaysia, it tends to come from outside. And when these forces come from outside, the impact is not as strong as it would be if local regulators and local investors took a stand on sustainability matters. And I'll give you an example. You know, foreign shareholdings in Malaysia have been falling dramatically for the last 10 years. And it's noticeable that in sectors with particularly questionable sustainable outlooks, like say power in Malaysia, which are very coal-fired or coal-based, you know, Tenaga's foreign shareholdings at a record low. Look at plantations, which has attracted all kinds of controversies. Foreign shareholding has been falling precipitously in that sector as well. So we have lived with declining foreign shareholding for a long time. But is it sufficiently disciplining in terms of encouraging domestic companies to embrace sustainability? I would say the answer is, at the moment, no. Primarily because domestic funds are still not as strong in terms of asking these companies to change the way they operate. And as long as domestic funds do not, who are the bigger shareholders of these companies, do not discipline these companies or are more active in you know, encouraging their boards to change their behavior, it is very hard to see dramatic progress in terms of these companies embracing E and S, you know, sustainability metrics or factors to improve their long-term value creation potential. Because that's what it's all about. You know, ESG is all about reducing risks and embracing opportunities in the transition to a low-carbon economy. At the moment, our Malaysian corporates don't seem to recognize that the risks that are inherent because they don't see a dramatic shareholder reaction.
Even after Saim Dabi is being called out, Top Glove is being called out, do you feel that there is no...
Well, look at that. Look at those situations, right? You have seen bans by the US authorities on Saim Dabi products, on FGV products, on Top Glove products. And is that sufficient to change their behavior? They're definitely much more aware of how easy it is now for an NGO anywhere in the world to accuse a company of not being sustainable, and of abusing sustainability parameters like labor or environment. And they get penalized, you know. It's almost as if they're guilty before being proven innocent.
Yes, yes. Yep.
And the reaction should be a lot stronger. But the point is the US a big consumer of palm oil? Is it sufficiently penalizing for these companies for a ban? The thing is, in Malaysia, the market is flush with domestic liquidity. And the liquidity is kind of trapped in Malaysia. And when you look at the boards of most companies, they are not very activists, let's say.
Yes, correct.
And neither are investors.
Yes, correct.
So the compendium makes the point that unless our core investor base, especially institutional funds like EPF, you know, Coop, PNB, become more activist, it is very difficult for these companies to change because there's no real repercussions.
There's a lot of argument in terms of political will, whether or not there is any interest within the three big funds that you mentioned to want to change and become a little bit more activist. We've seen how the previous PNB CEO tried to do it and was removed because of that, and perhaps all the other issues surrounding it.
Yeah.
Do you feel that these these institutional investors, the three funds that you speak of, and perhaps many other funds out there in market, do you feel that the urgency for them to be a little bit more activist is not there because of the political arguments surrounding it?
Potentially. I mean, we are seeing progress. Let's, you know, for say, Coop, Khazanah, EPF, they've all signed up with the PRI. Principles for Responsible Investment Body, which has its own demands on its signatories, you know, to integrate ESG into their investment considerations, to report on their progress in terms of active stewardship, and also to advance, you know, ESG principles in their respective markets. And EPF is putting a lot of resources into that. You know, they set up a sustainability investment center, you know, with a dedicated research team. They've asked sell-side brokers to be much more active in talking about ESG and educating participants in the capital markets about ESG. And they themselves have said, we are not going to be as docile as we used to be before with corporates who, you know, do not advance sustainability concepts. Mm. You know, before, the standard modus operandi for Malaysian corporates is, if you don't like what we're doing, we'll just sell.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to make a fuss, we'll just sell and we'll move on. But That should change. If you want real change in the way companies behave, we have to call them out. Just like BlackRock called out Top Glove. Yeah. We need domestic investors to also step up and voice their concerns when boards are acting in a non-sustainable manner or businesses are acting in a non-sustainable manner. And I think it's very important for big funds, especially funds like EPF, to set the tone for that.
What's your house view in terms of the way moving forward? Do you think that they'll be a little bit more aggressive, more than they are now?
Well, time will tell. You know, whether we will see domestic funds being more aggressive in terms of voicing their concerns about sustainability issues with domestic companies. But, you know, the competitor makes clear, time is not on our side. Yeah, other countries are moving much, much faster. Mm. And we tend to risk losing out in multiple areas in terms of, you know, if we delay our transition from a high carbon to low carbon economy, you know, we are potentially, you know, companies like Petronas with a lot of oil and gas reserves, what are those reserves going to be worth, you know, in the future? And what is our fallback if those reserves lose value? Do we have another driver for the economy? Do we have another driver for tax revenues? You know, Petronas is 20% plus of our fiscal revenues. What happens if that is impaired because the whole world is using less fossil fuels?
Yeah, but it's also important for the investors, perhaps even retail investors, to ask this to the to the companies themselves. This week, we'll see Petgas, Petchem having their AGMs. I don't see ESG being part of the agenda. It's more of the routine stuff, director election, stuff like that, confirming of the statements. It's not there.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, you know, activist investors should rise up and ask and demand more from the companies that they're investing in?
I think the tone is set from the top. And I think the government has to take a lead on this in terms of promulgating our sustainability targets. Many countries have talked about targets for achieving net zero carbon emissions. You know, most of them are 2030, some are 2040, some are 2050. Petronas has a 2050 target. Maybank has a 2030 target, you know, for being net zero carbon emissions. Does Malaysia have a target yet? No. Not yet. So we have to set the narrative. We have to make it clear. We want to achieve a target, and these are the policies that will get us to that target. Until the government starts that conversation, it is very difficult to expect large corporates, many of which are linked to the government as government-linked companies, to start that conversation without the government taking the lead. So I kind of understand that they're not focusing on the issue right now, because the government doesn't seem to be focusing on that issue right now. But hopefully that will change. You know, our trading partners will sort of force the issue, I guess. The Paris Climate Agreement is coming up for review this year in COP26. That will also force the issue. I think we are running out of time, I guess, in terms of, you know, pushing this agenda forward.
We'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Maybank Investment Bank on the ESG compendium. Welcome back. I have with me Anand Padmakanthan, the Regional Head of Equities Research at Maybank Investment Bank. We've spoken a lot about the compendium per se. Let's talk about the compendium itself. Normally, when you guys send research reports, it's about 6-7 pages, but actually the research itself is 1 or 2 pages. The disclaimer is up to 4-5 pages.
True.
This ESG compendium, yes, the disclaimer is about 4-5 pages, but the report itself is over 100 pages. And you really live up to your name of it being a compendium. And because of that, the top of mind argument that I want to ask is, what were some of the expectations or the theses that you had in preparing such a document? And then in the pursuit of preparing it, what were some of the findings that you thought were interesting that was unearthed? Talk to us through it.
Okay. Well, to be clear, this is the Malaysian compendium for ESG. As you know, MKE is present in 6 ASEAN countries. And my heads of research in the other countries will be publishing their own country compendiums over the next 2 months. So the whole idea of this compendium is basically to lay the base of where the country stands on sustainability issues and where all the various stakeholders in that country, government, regulators, corporates, consumers, stand as well on sustainability issues. And then we moved on to where, as research analysts, how we see corporate Malaysia or corporate Thailand or whatever other countries we will write the compendium on as responding to sustainability issues. And crucially, for our institutional investors, which companies we feel are responding the best to pressures to improve their ESG profiles and where they can add value. Because obviously, you know, ESG is all about risks and opportunities, but it has to tie back to the business model, ultimately. And while we have partnered with Sustainalytics, an external data provider, for some of their quantitative scoring, ultimately it is the analyst view that takes precedence, because they are closest to the company and they have a forward-looking view on which companies are actually responding positively and trying to improve their ESG factors. And those companies are the ones that we are most interested in.
Do you feel that some of these companies that stand out, are they coming from a particular sector or they're quite diverse? Because in my mind, I was thinking of, say, financial services companies, the impact to environment might not be as comprehensive as plantation or rubber gloves or oil and gas or energy. Do you feel that these companies come about the same from one sector?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I mean, different sectors have different sort of sustainability impacts. So something like telcos, relatively neutral, especially in terms of environmental issues, telcos are relatively neutral. Banks as well, as you pointed out. Then you have the other end of the spectrum where you have things like oil and gas, very high carbon industries. Plantations would be probably part of that spectrum as well. Mm. You know, when we did this compendium, we cover about 100 stocks in Malaysia. Our ESG portfolio to start with has only 16. So we ran a very strict filter. And it's a very diverse set of companies. It's not focused on one particular sector or the other. But what's interesting is our 16 companies embrace different levels of ESG awareness and ESG positioning. So we have very highly rated companies on the scale, companies like, just to name a few, Berjaya Auto, Inari, Bursa Malaysia. Excellent ESG credentials, we feel. They have great boards, very diverse, good environmental footprint, very good targets for social and environmental issues. But at the other end, we also include companies which are in sectors like we mentioned, oil and gas, construction. These are traditionally very high carbon sectors, very sustainable, vulnerable sectors. Why do we include those companies? It is because those companies are the ones that will generate the alpha for investors as they improve their operating metrics to embrace more sustainability. So if you talk to Gamuda, if you talk to Yinsen, like Yinsen is pivoting to renewables very aggressively, and that's a good way to ride the change from being a low-rated company in terms of ESG at the moment to one that will be much better rated later and attract a re-rating in the process. Mm. Same with companies like Gamuda and IOI. They are much more engaged on sustainability issues like RSPO, no deforestation for Gamuda as well in terms of their property developments, much more environmentally friendly, more green buildings, etc. So these kind of insights, only analysts who are very familiar with the company and can provide. Mm. So that's the emphasis we make in the compendium to our clients, that yes, there's a lot of ESG data in the market. There's more and more ESG data, but a lot of it is based on publicly available information and is backward-looking. Forward-looking data or forward-looking guidance can only come from engagement with the management on a regular basis and understanding whether they are aware of the sustainability issues. And that, we are very well positioned to do that because we have research analysts who have covered these companies for 10 years and have seen the evolution of the business model.
Some of the management as well as the board are not from this century. They are living in an area where things are new to them, including using Zoom. Sorry, I'm going to be a bit blunt. So when you come about and say things like the social impact, there's governance impact, are they equipped to manage such challenges that is really rising hard and fast towards the face of these companies?
I think it's getting easier and easier because the impacts are becoming more and more obvious. If I tried to have this conversation 10 years ago, when most people didn't even know what ESG was, it'd be a much more difficult conversation. But now, we've talked about product bans by countries like the US. Mm. We're talking about the EU, talking about border carbon taxes. Mm. Can Malaysia afford to be a high carbon economy when our trading partners are saying, if you want to export to us, we're going to tax you for your carbon input in your products. And that means we're going to be much less competitive. Can we afford to remain competitive in FDI if the headlines talk about foreign labor abuses in this country, about environmental degradation in this country? No MNC will want their product or their brands to be associated with that kind of headlines. So it has a lot of much clearer implications now than it did 10 years ago. So I would say yes, boards are much more receptive to this conversation and pushing their management to respond to this conversation. And that's essential. Management teams have to change and try to realize that this is no longer optional, like our title of our report. It's no longer optional. Mm. You have to be more sustainable going forward, or you risk being uncompetitive.
As you were mentioning early on in the interview, the E and S in the ESG is actually quite troubling for Malaysian corporates to address. Do you feel that because perhaps the environment is well defined, everybody understands what it means when you talk about environment, governance as well. Social, however, has a very murky parameter in terms of what constitutes as a social impact. Anywhere from labour issues to, I guess, wages. Do you feel that that area is perhaps an area that most Malaysian corporates need to focus on currently?
Yes, I believe so. And I believe the Top Glove situation did sharpen a lot of minds on that. And, you know, S, not just about treatment of labour, but also things about health and safety. You know, we've had a lot of accidents on construction sites in KL and stuff. So companies have to be a bit more aware.
SUKE highway as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Also things like supply chain or ethical sourcing as well. You know, do our companies audit their supply chain? Do they? We don't know because it's never been revealed in the annual reports. It's not been talked about in any great deal.
Nobody's asking for it, I guess.
Correct. But if you are looking at a 3 to 5 year timeline going forward, everyone will be asking for it. And it's interesting because we have a regional platform. You know, we have consumer companies in the Philippines which are far ahead of many Malaysian companies in terms of auditing their supply chain.
Sorry, the mood you're giving off right now, the way I can get it is these companies are not aware that they are lagging behind. They are, perhaps some of them are even in trouble outright. And companies that come out ahead in the near future, and when I say near, means this year, they tend to be well poised for the next 5 to 6 years to come. Is that the kind of conversations that we are having right now?
Yeah, well, I'm not that sort of negative. I mean, many companies are aware of this, some are not. What we see in the capital markets is because the disciplining nature of capital markets, when you do something wrong, your share price should suffer and you should be sold down. There should be, you know, conversations between...
In theory,
institutional investors and boards. Is that happening?
No. Facebook got fined, 5 million, their shares went up. Alibaba got fined very recently, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, their shares went up. It's like strange.
Yes.
To get fined means the share price goes up. So
regulations need to catch up with the gravity of what's happening. You know, not always the case everywhere. But in Malaysia, I guess, you know, as I mentioned before, until domestic investors, which are the primary source of share price support for many of these companies, until they stop closing one eye and they start insisting on sustainability adoption by these companies, it's very difficult to see these companies responding. What do companies respond to? It's not media, it's not, you know, you and me talking. It's their share price going down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is the ultimate disciplining
factor. Absolutely.
So if you have institutional investors who don't sell no matter what, pointless, right? So that's what we are talking about. You know, this education has to come from the domestic shareholders themselves. And I'm very happy to see EPF doing that. They have made a stand. They have said by 2030, ESG will be part of all their institutional decisions. So we will see how that pans out for the boards who are not aware.
But perhaps internal pressure is also different for EPF. They've already declared a long time ago that they are diversifying equity holdings, not just in the domestic market. So they're free to shop around elsewhere around the globe. PNB also, we can see the annual report from year on year. It's a bit different in terms of the complexion of domestic versus international. And because of that, it seems like these funds are no longer pressured to continue to hold on to domestic equities.
Yeah.
But that is one area that we can close. Before we end, I just want to touch a little bit about outside of the capital markets, SMEs. Employ about 70 to 95% of Malaysians out there. It's not covered by Maybank Investment because of obvious reasons. We want to know a little bit more in terms of how will the vast majority of companies out here in this country approach ESG, particularly in an area where that might not be their top 3 or top 10 even of their concerns. Survivability is much more of an immediate need for them to address.
Yeah.
What are the conversations that we can have about these SMEs?
Yeah, listed companies tend to get the limelight because they're bigger and they're in the public eye. But obviously, as you've mentioned, SMEs are the backbone of the country. And the only way to sort of reach them in a way, because there's no shareholder discipline per se, it has to come from regulatory interventions to encourage them to do the right thing. I think, you know, from the SMEs that are part of the supply chain, because we do meet SMEs which are not listed, you know, which are part of the supply chain, I think the awareness of sustainability issues is there, especially on the social side, in terms of treatment of labor in particular. Mm. You know, I think that's definitely there. And environmental issues as well. It's very difficult to escape the headlines on environmental issues as well. The question is, you know, are they prepared for potential changes in the future? You know, we talk in the compendium about things like the inevitable policy response, because we are so far behind as a planet in terms of our climate goals. Mm. We're so far behind that policies can change very dramatically, mm. you know, in a very short space of time. And that could be very, very damaging for businesses which are not prepared for those changes. You know, there could be carbon taxes around the corner because, you know, we are so behind on our climate targets. Or we could ban ICE cars, you know, internal combustion engine cars, because, you know, the climate's getting hotter a lot faster than we expected. Are the SMEs ready for that? So I think it requires both regulatory intervention to educate them and to prepare them, you know, to have them think about things like shadow carbon pricing. You know, I have a carbon footprint. I'm not paying for it now. But maybe I should start looking at, you know, how I may have to price my products or change my production techniques if I impute a price for carbon from, you know, what my carbon emissions are. So those are the things I think SMEs can do now with minimal additional resources, and they should be prepared. And I think regulations can help them do that by encouraging this sort of preparations.
That was our conversation with Anand Padmakanthan, the Regional Head of Equities Research at Maybank Investment Bank. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to Astro Awani. Look for Notepad. There are plenty of interviews like this. ESG continues to be our focus for this year, so continue to search for ESG on Astro Awani websites, wherever you get the information. Until then, thanks very much for watching, and goodbye.